Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Good day. You are listening to America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. I am Carrie Weber, executive editor at America.
And I'm Father Sam Sawyer, another executive editor at America. Each week, we offer news and analysis from the intersection of the church and the world, gathered by the team at America Magazine.
And we are joined today by Robert David Sullivan, another editor at America. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
We are very glad to have you. And Father Matt Malone is out of the office today at an undetermined location. So we have Father Sam Sawyer, we have Robert David Sullivan, we've got me. Stick around. It's still worth listening, I think, right?
Absolutely.
All right, good. And we also have Rachel Liu, who is someone who wrote a really interesting article for us about the value of work, which we thought a particularly appropriate following the Labor Day weekend. She is a Catholic convert who teaches philosophy at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota, and she lives there with her husband and four boys. She got her PhD in philosophy from Cornell University, and she's written for us, for At America, for The Federalist, for The American Conservative. And she is here to talk about her article, Can Catholic Social Teaching Help Solve the Labor Crisis? Rachel Liu, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're very glad to have you. So for folks who have not yet read your piece, I wonder if you could give us a brief sort of synopsis of your thesis.
Sure. So my piece is about meaningful work. And the context for this is pretty related to the things you've just been discussing here. It's sort of the ongoing discussion that we're having in America today about the best way to respond to this rise in unemployment, especially following in the wake of automation, right? Smart machines are increasingly able to do things that people used to do for a living. And as we try to figure out how to cope with that, we hear a lot about many of the things that people need in a job, that they need jobs, that they need jobs with some level of stability, that they need to support their families and so forth. And I don't disagree with any of that. Those are all clearly very important things. But I just wanted to sort of draw out something we don't always pay enough attention to, which is that we also need people to have the opportunity to do meaningful work. And I especially emphasize that meaningful work should be genuine service of some kind to other human beings, to the common good as a whole. So that's really what I talk about in the piece.
And how does Catholic social teaching sort of come into that conversation for you?
Well, so Catholic social teaching emphasizes at many points that work is something that we're called to do, and that work is defining of our humanity in certain ways, and that work should be ennobling, right? So there's really a lot through Rerum Novarum, through Laborum Exercens, and other papal encyclicals that talk about the way in which work should uplift us. So I talk about some of those passages in the piece.
Yeah, and in fact, I think it's helpful to remind people that the focus on work is not some sort of moralizing, demand that everyone slave away. But in fact, it goes all the way back to our creation. You know, it harkens back to Genesis and the command to go out and multiply and subdue the earth. That's the kind of work we're called to, this sort of creative activity along with God in the image of God.
Yeah, I love that passage. And Pope St. John Paul II reflects on that at some length in Laborum Exercens. It's very beautiful. He talks about how even after the fall, that basic charge was not erased, right? We still have this responsibility to help unfold creation, and that's ennobling for us as human beings as well. So work should be that, right? It should give us the opportunity to do that.
Right. And well, and even the fact that, that in the creation story in Genesis, God is presented as being at work. Right, not just uttering magic words or something, but actually laboring to bring creation into being and then calling us into that same labor alongside him.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
Now, Rachel, you talk about technology being considered a threat these days to some employment, but this has sort of always been a concern in some ways. You know, the Industrial Revolution brought some technology that changed the way jobs worked. And so how is it different now, or how is it similar?
Right. It is both similar and different. We have had periods in the past where a fairly rapid acceleration of technology leads a large number of people to basically be without employment or need to look for new employment all at one time. So, of course, in the immediate wake of the Industrial Revolution, that happened to a great extent. And some of these early works in Catholic social teaching, Rerum Novarum and so forth, are trying to think about what should we do now? What kinds of conditions can we try to aim for now that can help support workers in this new environment? The same thing happens again, in different places as agriculture gets replaced, right, by or sort of small farm agriculture gets replaced to some extent by sort of bigger farms and, more efficient farming that requires less workers. And then we're seeing something similar now. Among the things that we're seeing right now, though, that's a little different is a rise in really intelligent computer programs, right? So a lot of things that we sort of would think of as white-collar labor, right, they're not necessarily really physical jobs, are getting taken over by basically computer programs that can do much more sophisticated things than they used to be able to do. So things that, lawyers and accountants and people like that used to do can now be, handed off to a machine, basically. And we're also seeing another big one that's sort of on the cusp, not quite happening yet, but will happen, is the potential of driverless vehicles. That could put a lot of people out of work, right? If we reach the point where trucks and a lot of delivery sorts of devices and things like that could be handed over to machines. So similar, but also different in certain ways. A lot of people who sort of thought of themselves as having very reliable jobs may not in the next 10 to 20 years.
Should we just ban driverless cars? Or use the law to try to reverse this automation?
I wouldn't be in favor of that. I think we are probably going to start getting a lot more discussion of that, right? Should we just ban these technologies? I mean, when you think about it, there were similar sorts of conversations going on. Like, okay, so think about the Dust Bowl farmers, right? I read The Grapes of Wrath when I was in high school and was, mildly traumatized, right? Thinking about all of these families and what are they supposed to do and, flocking to California and they can't find work there either. And, so this is not a totally dissimilar situation in some respects, right? But then when you think, would it have been good if we had just banned tractors, if we had banned different forms of farming? Maybe. I mean, some people who dislike big agro would say, yeah, it would be good. It'd be good if we still had a whole bunch of really small farms. But a lot of us would probably say, well, it doesn't seem like a great idea for us to just try to, dam the river of technology and keep people doing certain kinds of drudge work. Or it's not even necessarily that, but in some cases it is that, right? Just indefinitely, just so that they can have jobs. And that's especially a bad idea when you think about the fact that in a lot of cases, this is sort of the irony, right? In a lot of cases, the kinds of jobs that we're looking to save might be jobs that aren't really tapping our human powers as much as they could anyway, right? I mean, that's especially true of like assembly line factory jobs, but even some of the white collar jobs that I mentioned, they aren't necessarily the most ennobling kind of labor, right? We could imagine a world in which we could be serving each other in sort of more humanizing ways, more beautiful ways. That doesn't stop the short-term pain though, right? I mean, for those farmers that lost their farms, that was devastating. But sometimes over the longer run, it really does open potential for a better society.
Well, and in a general sense, sometimes over time, the technology has allowed for the creation of sort of creative work and some leisure time for families so that you can flourish by the work itself, but also maybe have a little break, right? Even on in creation, God rested.
Right. Well, right. You suggest in your article that the sentence here is, we could also benefit from more artists, musicians, scholars, pastors, spiritual directors, and gardeners. Or, instead of the example you give is spending a vast amount of money trying to, economically sustain a job like a factory worker that is being automated away. What if instead we spend that money on something like personal chefs, personal tutors, or home care workers?
Right.
So the kind of jobs where someone's in direct personal relationship with the person or the need that they're serving, which I think is a fascinating idea and kind of gives an imaginative picture of what this more humane economy might look like. But I still think it, you know, we face the challenge of how do we help shape the market and the regulations so that there's a path from here to there that doesn't involve, you know, like Grapes of Wrath Part 2, basically.
Right, right. And that's a very serious question. And although it is exciting when you think about all of the things that, you know, would be great if we could be doing, right? Oh, think of all these wonderful things that we could do. That would be a fantastic society. But we don't want to downplay the interim, you know, pain that this really can destroy people's lives, destroy their towns, right? It can be pretty devastating, and we don't want to glaze over that.
Right. Canon already has in many circumstances.
Yeah, well, right, right. I mean, that does end up happening. Yeah, it already has happened to a considerable extent, right? And the things that we've sort of ignored, you know, the opiate crisis and some of these things that have arisen in these areas that are just economically devastated, right, when factories are closing. So that is a huge problem. And I suggest a little bit in the piece how we might look at policy solutions that can at least help cushion the blow, right? There's never a perfect solution. There's just no perfect way to save people from the pain of losing their jobs and also try to, you know, push towards an economy with more humane jobs. There's nothing's perfect, but I think there are some ways that we can at least help cushion that impact so it's not Grapes of Wrath Part 2, while also, you know, trying to move in the direction of a more humane economy.
Right. It's that sense of that Pope Francis is always talking about, of seeing that person in front of you and responding to all of these issues with the sense of those individuals in mind, not just the policy. But I wanted to ask first about this sense of, we're talking about that some jobs may fall away because of changes in technology, and that people have the opportunity to go into possibly more service-oriented jobs or other occupations, and the pains that that might cause in the process. I wonder what role sort of education plays in that process and those changes, because I think some of the jobs that we're talking about don't necessarily require a college degree and might involve, you know, a number of different kinds of intelligence, but not specifically a degree. And moving into a different sort of job might be tough for someone who doesn't have the specific education.
Right. That's a great question. Actually, it's a question I think about a lot, both as a writer and also as a mom, right? Because I'm raising four boys and I keep thinking, well, what should I encourage them to learn and to study and to develop? You know, I want them to be fulfilled human beings, but I also want them to have jobs someday. And it's really hard actually to figure that out in our sort of changing economy. I think, though, that first of all, we are, I hope, going to be looking at an expanded, what economists would call an expanded service sector, right? But what that really means is human beings serving other human beings, right? Whether that's, you know, running sports camps for kids or reading to elderly people or, you know, helping people organize their closets, right? Just people doing things that make life better for other human beings. You don't necessarily need rarefied skills to do all of that. Another thing, though, is that right now there's actually a fair amount of demand for workers with manual type skills, right? There's actually quite a lot of demand for those kinds of skills, right? So some people should be sort of suggested to develop those kinds of skills so that they can work as electricians or carpenters or welders or those kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, right now we're seeing concern about actually whether or not we will be able to find enough labor to work in the recovery efforts after Harvey down in Houston, right? Like, will there be enough people to actually rebuild the infrastructure involved?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and you know, you never know extending out into the future exactly how long that kind of thing will be done. You know, I mean, some of those things might eventually be taken over by machines, but a lot of these spatial, you know, these jobs that require really careful, intimate spatial awareness aren't that easy for us to hand off to robots right now, right? Humans still have a lot of skills in some of those areas. I met someone recently whose son is a cooper. He's actually, you know, building barrels, basically. And he said, well, that business is actually booming because I guess it's, you know, it's a fairly niche market, but there aren't a lot of people who have the kinds of skills you need to build a barrel, right? So
like
in the short term,
the rise in winemaking, I guess, or something?
Yeah, I guess, or something like that. Or maybe they're decorative in some cases. I don't know what all the uses are, but apparently that there's an industry there now. So that might be, you know, pick up at least some of the slack. And I think it would be really cool if we had, you know, a larger economy in things made locally, right? We had, you know, chairs and artwork and things in our houses that were actually made by local craftsmen.
Well, Rachel, that actually segues a little bit to a question I wanted to ask, which is, what do you think for Catholics, for people who are informed by Catholic social teaching and want to try to live from it, what changes do you think this suggests in our regular way of proceeding, our regular way of approaching work, both for maybe employees and also employers?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think about this on a higher policy level, but I think on a level of just sort of in our normal daily lives, it's good both for ourselves and for other people in our lives who might, you know, be encountering relevant issues, for us just to try to think more expansively both about things that we can do to serve the common good or that we can encourage other people to learn how to do, and also ways in which we can draw on the services of people closer around us, right? Is it good? You know, maybe you can support local artisans for your furniture instead of getting everything from, you know, IKEA or a large furniture store, or, you know, going to crafts fairs or things like that. Or maybe you can hire somebody in your, you know, your parish to do your yard work or something that you really need done, right? So I think it's good for all of us to think about ways in which we can help to generate those small-scale economies that really help people to use their skills.
Well, you're talking about local skills and using local labor, but that made me think, do we also need a more mobile workforce? Like when we talk about the recovery efforts in Houston, people willing to take their services to where they're needed,
right.
where there's a demand for them, Do people have to be more willing to relocate, and does that mean we should have any kind of policy that makes it easier to do that in terms of housing and things like that?
Yeah, those are really big questions, and sometimes they're painful questions, right? Because obviously a lot of people really desire rootedness, right? And you don't want to be too callous about just telling people, oh, you can't find a job, well, you know, just move, right? I mean, obviously people have ties to their areas sometimes, but I do also think you eventually have to reach a point where if you really can't find work, you really can't support your family, you really can't use your skills where you are, and you can be useful somewhere else, that's something that you have to consider. And yeah, I think that it would probably be beneficial for us to consider policies that help people, you know, especially people who don't have money for a move or something like that, to get started in some place where their skills are more needed.
Right, even if it's only on a temporary basis.
Right, right. And especially young people who haven't established themselves yet, right? A lot of these unemployed younger people in towns where factories have closed and so forth. You know, I know it's hard when your family is there, but some of those people really need to think about moving to some place where there's more opportunity for them to develop themselves and establish their own families.
Now, we just have 2 minutes left, Rachel, but quickly, do you have any stories of your own life of someone you know who kind of made this transition or had to make this sort of adjustment, whether due to location or technology?
Oh, man. I think in some ways, we all kind of know people who have done this in various sorts of ways, right? Several people spring into my head who have changed careers or who have moved in various places. I myself represent kind of a funny example, right, of someone who, you know, older people, so I'm a mom, and I adjunct teach philosophy, but I also write as a freelance writer, and, you know, I do all that partly so I can have flexibility to be with my kids and follow my husband, and older people will say, oh, well, that's such a unique arrangement, and I say, well, no, it's not really. I know a lot of people who are like that, right, who are finding various ways to make a little money on the side and be part-time employed and then move into a new profession. My brother was in academia for a while, and then he moved back to be close to his wife's family. And actually, he spent a while working sort of in agriculture and small-time jobs. And then he got a job as an economist in Arkansas and moved down there. So I think a lot of people are trying to think more expansively about what different sorts of things can I do? And some of those things don't work out, right? I know a few people who decided they wanted to start farms and that did not work. And so
yeah, I think that often seems like a very attractive thing in theory. When you're like, oh, I could just go out, you know, like with the sunrise and tend to my crops. But the actual reality of a farm is very, very hard work.
Yeah, especially if you don't know anything about agriculture, right? Although I think it would be nice if some people could, you know, we could do something to smooth the way so that maybe some people could find jobs in agriculture. But, you know, sometimes the romantic idea doesn't quite pan out.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel, for your time. We really appreciate your spending your working time talking to us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was really a pleasure.
Folks who are interested can read Rachel's article, Can Catholic Social Teaching Help Solve the Labor Crisis, at AmericaMagazine.org. And she just brings up so many good points. And we were talking earlier also, you know, she's talking about all these different ways in which you kind of move around, about that the gig economy and the way in which you kind of, like, now adjunct teaching is like a gig, and like maybe you're an Uber driver and maybe you're a farmer on the side.
Well, questions that are going to be with us for decades to come.
Indeed. So, and we'll be answering them all, I'm sure, at americamagazine.org.
For decades to come.
Yes. Attempting to do as much. So we invite you to join our community at America by subscribing. You can call 1-800-627-9533. And again, you can find all this content at americamagazine.org. For Robert David Sullivan and Father Sam Sawyer, I'm Carrie Weber, and we hope you have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.